Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
With Renault's award-winning hybrid and full electric lineup, where style meets tech. Rethink Renault.
This is News Talk.
Tech Talk, this is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll meet the team that has handed down more than €4 billion in fines to big tech, along with some corrective measures that have shaped social media here in Europe. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. Last week, I brought you inside the Irish Data Protection Commission to meet some of the team dealing with issues such as data requests and the information of children. But in part two of this special report, we're going to meet the teams that tackle big tech. Since 2018, I've reported on fines handed down by the Data Protection Commission, such as the €1.2 billion fine to Meta in May 2023 and the €530 million fine to TikTok in May 2025. The sum total of the fines issued by the DPC to big tech since that time comes in at a cool €4.04 billion. But only around €20 million has been paid to date due to legal challenges. There are less than 300 people working at the Irish Data Protection Commission. The operation now has three commissioners leading the charge. They are Dale Sunderland, Des Hogan and Niamh Sweeney. While I was down at the DPC, I met with Dale Sunderland and started by asking him why we now have three commissioners instead of one.
So ultimately, there was a decision by government, but it was enabled by the Data Protection Act 2018, which was implemented alongside the General Data Protection Regulation. And it provided for a commissioner for the Data Protection Commission, one or up to three. So a number of years ago, the government decided to increase from one Data Protection Commissioner to three commissioners. And that was their decision. And the idea was it was in acknowledgement and recognition of the very onerous mandate of the Data Protection Commission, particularly as a lead supervisory authority with a European-wide mandate by virtue of the large number of technology companies, global technology companies based in Dublin with European headquarters. So that means under the GDPR, we take the lead European role in regulating their personal data processing activities within the European Union. So I think in part the government recognised that that's a huge task. It's a national strategic task. It's of strategic importance for Ireland, and that the DPC needs to be resourced accordingly, and also at the top of the organisation, at leadership level, at commissioner level, but right down to the entirety of the organisation, that we have the sufficient resources to carry out our job. And we do that on behalf of hundreds of millions of European Union individuals on a daily basis, users of social media platforms, search engines, emerging AI technologies. You can think of any major household name in terms of a technology company operating in this part of the world, and we're most likely the lead data protection authority for that company within the European Union.
My colleagues, I say it all the time, but my colleagues in News Talk take the mick out of me because I'm always Captain Sensible when it comes to information. But for those who might roll their eyes at people like me, and maybe people like you, can you just explain why this sort of stuff matters? Why does data protection and privacy matter?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And some of us do like to try and fight the good fight, but but it's a really imperative, important that everybody, the person on the street, including children, understand why information about them, which is essentially what data protection, personal data is. It's information about us, who we are, what we are, what we like, our names, our gender. You can think of anything that's about you or me, and that falls under the umbrella of the concept of personal data. And so why does it matter? Well, I think it's always helpful to step back a little bit and remember that the laws we have in Europe, particularly the General Data Protection Regulation, the GDPR, they were born out of the oppressive and totalitarian regimes of the 20th century, such as Nazi Germany and the communist era. And because of the horrors of those times, you know, a European legislator said never again. So that's why we have the right to data protection as one of the fundamental or core rights of every person in the European Union. It really is one of the pillars of our democratic rule of base law society, a society which respects human autonomy, human dignity, our liberties and freedoms. It should point out, Jess, though, that the right to data protection is not an absolute right, so it has to exist and coexist with all the other rights, and including the right to do business. And it is necessary for the functioning of our society, for the economy, to deliver public services, to run sports, to run small businesses. And so really what's critical is that any organization that is collecting and processing personal data, that they do it in a way that respects the requirements of the law. And then essentially we're here as the DPC to ensure that that happens. Mm. And we have a few key ways in which we do that, through guidance, through assisting organizations, helping them get it right. Particularly with the large technology companies, we would engage with them before they launch new products on the European market to make sure that there's no red line issues for us. And then, of course, we handle complaints, a very significant number. And also we will open investigations and take enforcement action where that's necessary, all to ensure that there is a balance and a proportionate and lawful use of all of our information, which, when you bring it right back to where I started, is essential for the proper functioning of our societies.
One area that crops up time and again, and I had it on the show a few weeks ago when I was talking about the HSE app. So it's an innovation from our health service to try and help get people's information into their hands. And I had a number of emails from people who expressed concerns that they needed the GovID to get access to the HSE app. And people seem to be somewhat suspicious about how, when and why the government would want my information, need my information and so on. Is your office consulted on projects like that to ensure that it's not unnecessary and it's not, you know, big brother gone mad?
We absolutely are. And there's an obligation for every piece of new legislation that's being proposed by the government that they would consult the DPC. It's a mandatory consultation. I think we had in the region of 80 pieces of legislation which we advised the government on last year. But more broadly than that, any major public sector project which involves, you know, extensive amount of personal data in its use or the collection of it, there will be consultation, very regular consultation. We have an entire dedicated team to work with public sector bodies on this. Again, the idea is that these projects are part of delivery of public services in a digital ecosystem. It's quite right and proper that government would seek to use more digital tools to deliver public services. And so our aim and our objective is to ensure when that's happening, it's done in the proper way. I think there's an obligation, of course, for any body, whether they're a private or public sector body, to make sure that they bring people with them, that they inform them about what they're doing, inform them about how they're going to protect their right to data protection, perhaps inform them what they're not doing. Because a vacuum or a lack of information or clarity on what's being proposed can sometimes give rise to concerns, legitimate concerns that individuals may have. Because essentially, at the end of the day, what matters is trust, public's trust in the delivery of public services. And if national strategic plans around digital and AI are to be truly realised to the benefit of individuals and the delivery of public services, at the core of that, the trust of the public will be absolutely essential.
Another area that we talk about quite a bit on this show is obviously enough technology. The arrival and the emergence of GDPR came at a time when social media was sort of mature enough. Is the difficulty that the big tech companies were trying to retrospectively put measures in place to comply with data regulation and legislation rather than that privacy by design element that we're all so familiar about now?
I think absolutely there is, that is part of the what may be described as perhaps ongoing concerns around some aspects of the online world and social media platforms. And yes, the social media platforms, as we know them today, began, were, you know, in gestation and been designed and created well before the GDPR came into effect. They were being designed and developed in other jurisdictions such as the United States of America. The ad tech system is another example. It developed in a time where the data protection laws that we have now were not as strong, to use that term. Data protection authorities certainly didn't have the powers in terms of investigative and preventative powers that we have now. And we didn't have the resources. Mm. So I think to contrast that against the development of AI, which is now the big issue for us and raises significant, you know, challenges in terms of our capacity to regulate AI, now is a critical time for us as data protection authorities and the entirety of the digital regulators to try and make an impact now so that we don't look back in years to come and say we didn't really get it right. Mm. That takes a sustained effort on our part, and it will take sustained investment in regulators like the DPC in technologies that our own use of technology, such as AI, that we can use new technologies to make us more effective in our work. It'll take sustained investment in our staff. The DPC has approximately 300 staff now, a really, really excellent team of people who are highly skilled and highly expert in what they do. But we will need more staff than that. Mm. And we'll also need to continue upskilling and training and investing in the development of our staff so that as technology advances, we also have the skill sets to keep somewhat apace with that. Regulators are never going to be at the curve, at the front end of technological advancements, yeah. But we can't let ourselves get too far behind, because then we may end up trying to address problems when the issues have become embedded in terms of like social media platforms, how they work, for example. And you mentioned data protection by design, so that is a critical element of a really important aspect of the GDPR, that any organization, public sector, private sector, whatever they might be, really think carefully about how they're designing new products, and so particularly new technologies. And experience shows to us through our since 2018 as a lead regulator under the General Data Protection Regulation, those companies that really make an effort to build in data protection by design, data protection by default at the start, that really think carefully about their choices, about how they're going to process personal data, that they're not going to process personal data that's not necessary. They're going to implement, you know, privacy by default settings, for example, in respect to children. We've had investigations where we found that Instagram and TikTok didn't have their children-oriented privacy settings private by default, mm. And we found infringements and imposed fines against them for those infringements. So it's critical, and for us as regulators to be able to shape that process in terms of our external engagement, our thought leadership in this space, our ability to have the capacity to not just run investigations after the fact, mm. but also to be proactively engaged with companies before they ever hit the European market. We're really investing heavily in that. But that, together with the over 30% increase this year on top of almost 50% increase last year of complaints, it's there's only so much we can stretch our resources. So in fact, myself and Des and Niamh, it would be, I nearly describe it as a concern, that we simply need the ability, the capacity to be proactively, to regulate now with impact, mm. rather than regulating looking back.
That point of regulating now with impact rather than regulating looking back is hugely important. But I asked Dale if it's something that will require further investment.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And there's a few strands to this. The first thing to say is that from data protection or personal data is part of every aspect of society. So as a regulator, we have a unique role of regulating perhaps percentage-wise, I'm not sure, but it's well 90% plus of organizations in this country as a national regulator, but also as an EU regulator. That's a vast mandate. Within that, then, we have an absolutely unprecedented increase in complaints. I was looking at figures earlier. In 2022, we had 9,300 cases raised with us. We're likely to hit 20,000 this year. Mm. Within that, then, we're managing significant litigation. On top of that, we're taking on new functions under the AI Act, which will bring us into a space in terms of regulation that we've never been before. So as a market surveillance authority, Added into that, we've new laws coming from Europe which will impose timelines around cross-border, right? The complaints there, the complaints relating to the big tech companies, mm-hmm. that will have to be conducted in specified timeframes. And we're trying to also keep abreast of technology and not just be reactive but also preventative. So yes, the DPC has had a very significant increase in staff, and the government has over a number of years continuously invested and supported this office, and I really want to note that. In 2014, I think we had, you know, in the region of 30 staff. We now have 300 staff. But the measure is not where we've come from. It's really where do we need to be to actually be a proactive, on the front foot regulator. Mm. That's not just waiting for a problem to happen, but that is horizon scanning and trying to position ourselves to ensure that where technology goes, that we're actually helping steer that course rather than just waiting for something to happen and then to come in after it, trying to remediate issues. So I think, as I said already, it's going to take further investment in our staff in the DPC through additional recruitment and also through continuing investment in the skill sets and the skills and the training of our staff, but also the use of new technologies as well to help us to better manage those caseloads.
That was Dale Sunderland, one of three commissioners at the Irish Data Protection Commission. He referenced the inquiries into big tech that has led to over 4 billion quid in fines. And when we come back here on News Talk, we'll meet the team that's leading those inquiries. Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. I'm bringing you the second part of a special report from inside the Irish Data Protection Commission. Before the break, we heard from Dale Sunderland, one of three commissioners. But now I want to introduce you to the team that carries out the large-scale inquiries into big tech. This team has issued over 4 billion euro in fines since 2018, only 20 million of which has been paid to date. We'll now hear about the considerations that go into those fines and the process around the appeals.
Hi Jess, my name is Keen O'Brien. I'm a deputy commissioner here responsible for the DPC's large-scale inquiries and cross-border complaints. A large-scale inquiry is where the DPC investigates systemic issues that impact large numbers of data subjects. So it'll often be issues that pose high risks to individuals. Where we do find infringements as part of large-scale inquiries, they'll often be accompanied by administrative fines, sometimes in the hundreds of millions of euro, and they'll often also be accompanied by corrective measures which require the relevant entity to change its behaviour and to bring its processing into compliance. So I suppose in terms of our own workload, the DPC in Ireland is what the GDPR would define as a lead supervisory authority for companies that have their main establishment in Ireland. And what this means in practice is that the DPC is responsible for regulating many of the world's biggest technology companies on behalf of individuals all around the European Union and European Economic Area. So I guess you can picture that we have a very busy and mm-hmm. interesting workload in that, and also a very big responsibility. But really, we meet that responsibility by bringing very significant enforcement action. So for example, if you take the administrative fines that have been imposed since the GDPR came into application, the DPC has itself imposed over 4 billion euro in administrative fines, and that actually accounts for over 57% of all fines imposed all around Europe under the GDPR. So it's a very significant workload, a very interesting and engaging workload. And while those fines are very significant, I think what's even more significant is the behavioural change that our work brings in industry generally.
So for some of those large-scale inquiries that we've heard about and featured on the station over the years, what triggers a large-scale inquiry in that? Could I, as a citizen, just flag something, an update on one of my social platforms with the DPC, and that will lead to it? Or does it have to be a large number of complaints about the one thing? Or is it as a result of an audit that perhaps somebody is doing and they spot some privacy change or that has arisen on the platform?
So our large-scale inquiries do sometimes come from complaints, and sometimes they come on our own volition. So if there's a particular issue that we're concerned about here in the DPC, we can pursue it by means of an own volition inquiry. But also sometimes a complainant might bring an issue of serious concern to us, and then we can decide to pursue that issue by means of what we call a complaint-based inquiry. I suppose our regulatory strategy, which is on our website from 2022 to 2027, very clearly sets out that we take a risk-based approach to regulation. And what that means in practice is that we apply our resources where it can do the most good for data subjects. So we need to be agile, and we need to be aware of new risks to data subjects and individuals as well, maybe brought about by new technologies. So a good example of this in recent years is we've needed to move and to be agile around new forms of artificial intelligence systems and the type of harms that they pose to data subjects. So in 2024, we commenced an inquiry concerning Google's processing of personal data to develop its PaLM-2 AI model. And then in 2025, we commence another statutory inquiry, this time concerning X's processing of personal data to develop its Grok AI model. And then this year in 2026, we commence another large-scale inquiry, this time concerning the use of AI to generate and publish sexualized images of individuals without their consent. Mm-hmm. So there's, we do need to be agile in terms of how we pursue our large-scale inquiries, and we're really guided by where our resources can do the most good and where we can protect individuals to the greatest extent possible.
For something like, and I'll go with this example because we mentioned it on the show 2 weeks ago, the nudification, that the story that dominated the headlines for much of January. In an instance like that, what's your first port of call? Do you pick up the phone to somebody in X and say, hey, yeah, we need to have a chat? Or what's the process?
Absolutely. So we have a range of different regulatory tools available to us. The GDPR in Article 57 is very clear that we have a number of different enforcement options. And we all come together, the different staff you've been talking to today and the different staff you'll see around the office later, and we all come together to use all of our available tools to the greatest extent possible. So where an issue of great concern comes to our attention, be it through a complainant, be it through our own normal engagement with big technology companies, be it through the media, we absolutely do have a relationship where we can pick up the phone to the big technology companies and to understand what's going on. As you can imagine, when we move closer to a large-scale inquiry and we're exercising very formal statutory powers, that's sort of engagement happens in a different context. But we absolutely blend and use all of our available tools and all of our available powers to protect data subjects as best you can. And as you've pointed out, sometimes a significant inquiry along with all of our powers and orders is necessary to protect data subjects. Sometimes that can be done in a different way and a more collaborative way, and really choosing which powers to exercise and how to carry out our functions is a really important part of our work.
Mm. How much access is required when investigating big tech, and how much cooperation and collaboration is there between those working for a big tech company and yourselves to get to the bottom of an issue? Again, not just for the fine side of things, but also identifying the corrective measures that are needed.
Absolutely. A huge amount of, engagement is required, be it through requests for information. Also, we have very important powers to compel information. We carried out our first insight inspection this year using statutory powers as well. So we use a variety of different powers to obtain the information we need and to make findings of infringement that ultimately lead to the €4 billion in administrative fines that I mentioned earlier, and very significant orders that require entities to change how they go about processing personal data.
Mm. One thing that I know I have said, even though I was going to frame the question as given out about the people who said it, but say if it's a €350 million fine against one of the big tech companies, I'll often say, but sure, that's loose change to these big tech corporations. How is a figure decided upon? And is a financial penalty like that, is it severe enough for some of the breaches that we've seen over the last few years?
I think a combination of corrective powers are needed. So fines are very important. And in terms of your question as to how they're calculated, one issue that's taken regard to is the turnover of the entity. So the global turnover of the entity is very relevant in calculating fines to make sure that they have that dissuasive effect. We also consider a range of different factors like the nature of the infringement, the type of personal data involved, the harm to data subjects, the duration of the infringement, and there's European Data Protection Board guidelines that sets out a harmonised position around Europe as to how fines must be calculated to have that dissuasive effect. But I think you're getting at something that's very true and a much more important point, and that is that the orders that we have to bring processing into compliance are far more consequential than the fines. They mandate entities to take steps to change their behaviour, and they're very, very significant indeed. And if you look at most of our biggest decisions, generally our biggest administrative fines have been accompanied by orders that mandate entities to take specified steps to bring themselves into compliance.
So how do you ensure that those corrective measures are taken, and they're taken to the highest standard, not just ticking a box but fulfilling the objective that you guys had identified?
So there's an enforcement process that begins. As you can imagine, a large-scale inquiry takes a considerable amount of time, a considerable amount of resources, and then at the conclusion of that inquiry, if there is an order, a new process begins which essentially enforces that order. So, for example, part of our work that maybe doesn't get as many of the headlines as the big tech cases is our domestic work. And we have large-scale inquiries into domestic entities. So just this month, we concluded an inquiry into the HSE concerning a personal data breach at Midlands Regional Hospital in Tullamore. And this was a personal data breach whereby hackers gained access to very sensitive health data regarding lab results processed by the HSE. So in this case, the DPC did impose a fine, a 300,000 euro fine in total, but also we also imposed an order. And what that means is now that that decision is made and the order is effective, the DPC will start an enforcement process to make sure that the HSE implements appropriate security measures to keep data safe going forward. So there will be iteration, there will be engagement, we'll take a look at the steps that are taken to comply with the order, we'll assess whether they're adequate, and then we'll bring the matter to conclusion either with further steps or if the steps already taken are adequate, that might be the conclusion of the matter.
Okay. Looking at it from a European level again, I know that you have European counterparts who would do elements, but because Ireland, as you explained, the significance of our role here, there is a distinction. What happens if and when there are disagreements in terms of whether it is fines or corrective measures or even decisions? What way does that process work?
Absolutely. I suppose the GDPR is still relatively new, even now that it's been in application for 8 years. And there are a lot of novel points of law in the GDPR, and a lot of novel points of law being applied to very novel technology. So often this does create a disagreement between data protection authorities as to the correct interpretation or the correct application of the law. And there's a mechanism under the GDPR whereby our decisions are subject to what we call a cooperation and consistency mechanism, where any supervisory authority in the European Union can either raise objections or raise comments on our proposed decisions, and in which case there's a dispute resolution mechanism that applies from there. I think what we've seen recently with all the novelty under the GDPR, in more recent years, we're starting to see a lot more judgments from the courts. So we're seeing judgments from the Irish courts and also from the Court of Justice of the European Union. That's helping to bring a lot of certainty to the law. And when regulators have certainty in the law, I think it's good for everyone. It brings more certainty for us going forward enforcing. It brings more certainty for the regulated entities who want to comply with the law. And it also brings more certainty to that process between regulators when there could have maybe been objections in the past. But a very good example of this is we've worked heavily on the question of behavioural advertising and how ads are served online. And there was a very useful judgment from the Court of Justice of the European Union relating to the correct lawful basis for that mechanism going forward. And that sort of certainty has helped some of our decisions go forward on a consensus basis without objections, whereas in the past we may have suffered objections due to the uncertainty in bringing draft decisions on novel points of law without certainty from the courts on them.
You mentioned there a few minutes ago that sometimes your inquiries and investigations, they can take a long amount of time, they can take a lot of man hours, one hours headspace to get done. But as we've reported, very often when a decision is passed down, the tech company will send me a press release saying we're going to appeal. And that seems to be the instance in a lot of these cases. What impact does that have, firstly, on the workload of your team? Do you have much back and forth in that regard? And also then in terms of the acceptance that they understand and acknowledge that they were in the wrong and your decision was correct and right?
Yeah, certainly. We have a very large litigation workload here in the DPC, and I know you're going to be speaking to Deirdre, our Director of Legal, as well about that. So in reality, the vast majority of our biggest decisions are appealed through the courts. What that means is twofold. I suppose, firstly, in terms of administrative fines, we can't collect the administrative fines until the appeals have concluded. That's just something that's set out in our governing legislation, and we have to wait to collect those administrative fines when an entity exercises its right of appeal. So, you know, while the majority of our fines that we've imposed have been collected, when you look at quantum, the vast majority hasn't yet been collected because the biggest fines are subject to appeal. In terms of if we exercise an order requiring compliance, there's a separate issue then as to whether that order takes effect immediately or whether that order is stayed pending the appeal. And it's not set out in the legislation. It's a matter for the discretion of the courts. And we've recently actually been before the Supreme Court with a very important judgment on that standard, which I'm pleased to say, for the majority of our orders that are currently subject to appeal, the entity in question has complied with those orders pending the appeal. Some have been stayed and some haven't, but the vast majority, a good example is our work on children's data with TikTok and Instagram. We had some big decisions on in 2022 and 2023 on those inquiries, imposing over €700 million in administrative fines confirmed, but more importantly also imposing orders around children's personal data being public by default on Instagram and on TikTok. And I'm very pleased to say that compliance with those orders has been achieved in the meantime, despite the fact that those decisions are subject to appeal and despite the fact that those fines haven't yet been collected. So, you know, I would say that the orders are really the most significant element in terms of changing behavior, and generally in the majority of cases, and especially with how difficult it is for an entity to achieve a stay pending an appeal, the majority of our orders are complied with within the required deadline that we set.
That was Kian O'Brien, who detailed the inquiries and investigations that can lead to significant fines. But as we know, and as has been said, only 20 million of the 4 billion total has been paid to date. And that is because many of the companies have stated their intent to appeal the decision. I met with the team that deals with those appeals.
I'm Deirdre O'Donovan. I'm Deputy Commissioner and Director of Legal Affairs. The legal unit, so we're a small, I suppose, unit, but we're very busy. A lot of our work is on the advisory side of the house, so engaging with the other units, complaint handling, large-scale investigations, all of that, so advising them on different issues that arise. And then litigation obviously takes up a huge amount of our time. So dealing mainly with judicial reviews and statutory appeals brought in respect of our decisions by various data controllers. Then we have other smaller, less high profile appeals and cases, I suppose, which have to be managed through as well. We would look after fining confirmations under the Act. So they take place usually for the Circuit Court. And then we would have other kind of enforcement and other aspects that we advise on that way as well.
It seems, from my point of view anyway, it does seem that We Will Appeal is the instant statement that comes out from big tech in particular when the large fines are handed down. Is that something that's almost anticipated from a DPC point of view now in terms of the robustness of a decision that is passed down when it comes to those large number of fines to try and prevent the opportunity for appeal? Or is it just something that's kind of part and parcel of this process now?
Well, I mean, there's certainly a trend, obviously, for these appeals to be brought. So in that respect, I suppose we do anticipate them and prepare for them. That said, I suppose we're also always learning, you know, from these appeals, and that feeds into the robustness of our own procedures and so on. So that's something that we always take into account. But I mean, there is a certain element of this, I think, as well, where, you know, the DPC as an organisation went through the long and detailed process of making these decisions, and now the next phase is almost inevitably defending these decisions. I think it's part of probably our growth as a regulator and maturing as a regulator. I think it's part of that process.
Mm. One thing that I find fascinating is the DPC is dealing, particularly again, with technology that is just evolving. It's just becoming a thing, and all of a sudden there has to be a rule book by which that people have to adhere to and the companies have to adhere to. Is it difficult to be in the position whereby you're making rulings and advising for the first time, like setting that precedent to make sure that it is the right call and that we're not going to face a bigger headache down the line?
It is, insofar as you say, the technologies are new, and I think we are always learning here, certainly. I mean, I don't come from a technical background in any way. So there is a certain element of learning that language and learning to understand the real life meaning, I suppose, of what these technologies are. There is then the difficulty, I suppose, or not the difficulty, it's a challenge. I mean, it's a very fast-paced environment that we're working in, and I think we've all got very used to being responsive. We have to deal with changes in legislation, we have to deal with changes that come from case law. We're trying to apply what we've already learned and the law has established to these new technologies, and there's always going to be a certain amount of, you know, there's going to be themes and lessons learned and precedents that you're going to carry over from one matter to the next and applying them to the different technologies. But I mean, obviously there's huge challenges. AI is the obvious one. I mean, the pace of that, but at the same time there are some, you know, fundamental principles, I suppose, that remain the same, and we're looking at it, you know, currently through our GDPR prism, and that gives us the guidance and the direction to go in.
That was Deirdre O'Donovan, Deputy Commissioner and Director General of Legal Affairs at the DPC. Now, when we come back here on News Talk, we'll find out more about the one-stop shop. Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Tech Talk at newstalk.com, as always, is the email address if you want to get in touch. I'm bringing you part two of a very special report from inside the Irish Data Protection Commission. We're now going to turn our attention to Europe.
My name is Grainne Hawkes, and I'm a Deputy Commissioner with responsibility for International Affairs, European Data Protection Board, One Stop Shop, and the AI Act implementation.
So that is an incredible portfolio. Can you just tell me a little bit about what each of those elements means?
Of course. So the one-stop shop refers to the one-stop shop under the GDPR. So that's where the DPC is responsible for a lot of the big tech companies that are based in Ireland, and we're responsible with respect to the rest of Europe. So how that operates is if somebody in Spain has a complaint against one of the big tech companies here, it'll be funneled to us through my team, and then we will disseminate it amongst our DPC colleagues to work on. Then European Data Protection Board, that's the board of all of the heads of the data protection commissions across Europe and the EEA. So my team's role there is to help determine the strategy that the DPC takes when it attends monthly plenary meetings and also monthly subgroup meetings. So there's 14 subgroups on specialist topics. International Affairs is just our engagement with international data protection authorities. So the likes of the Canadian Data Protection Authority, the US, South Korea, Japan, the UK ICO as well, obviously, those kind of relationships. Mm-hmm. And then I suppose AI Act implementation does exactly what it says on the tin. So it's just preparing the DPC for the new roles we're going to get under the AI Act.
Okay, so let's break this down a little bit by bit. So in terms of the GDPR side of things and the one-stop shop, the example you gave there of something coming in from Spain through your team, is that something that happens often? And can you just explain the significance of the Irish DPC within Europe? Because there is a significance there.
Of course, yeah. I mean, that happens. I have a huge team of, you know, five operatives that are purely responsible for monitoring what's called the internal market information system. So that's where all of these complaints and questions and queries are funneled to us. I think we would get on average around 150 notifications a day.
Wow.
Yeah. And then we funnel them to the relevant team. So it's extremely relevant. And I suppose the reason is the one-stop shop was set up in the GDPR. It was a brand new thing. And it's essentially the country of origin principle. So if there's a technology company that has its main establishment in an EU member state, it's that EU member state's data protection authority that will be responsible for all of their complaints, inquiries, and compliance, I suppose, with the GDPR. So because we have the likes of TikTok, Apple, Microsoft, Meta, in Ireland, all of those complaints or queries from across Europe come to us.
So that means then that there has to be obviously close collaboration then with your European colleagues. From a diplomatic point of view, is it what we say goes, or how does that work?
Oh, that's a great question. You're dead right. So cooperation is the fundamental foundation, I think, of the one-stop shop. And part of my role is definitely promoting that across the DPC and also making sure that our colleagues in Europe are aware that that's our primary, you know, our primary concern, I suppose, is to make sure that they feel comfortable. Because at the end of the day, if you put yourselves in the shoes of, in my example, let's say the Spanish DPA, that's a Spanish citizen who's really concerned about their rights. They've made a complaint to the Spanish DPA, but then it'll be investigated by us. So it's our responsibility to make sure that we keep the Spanish DPA very well informed about the progress of our investigation, what we're doing to, you know, vindicate the rights of that Spanish citizen. So I think cooperation underpins absolutely everything that we do, and it's particularly important on my team.
And so if, again, in terms of the final decision in an instance, is it what we in this country say go because we are home to the headquarters of the companies that you mentioned?
Okay, so I suppose there's mandatory cooperation under the GDPR when it comes to actual investigations and complaints. So what happens there is it'll be Ireland's call as the lead supervisory authority in terms of how a complaint is investigated and what we do to investigate it and how we run our investigations. Mm-hmm. But then in the GDPR itself, they have this mechanism called the cooperation mechanism. So when we finish our investigation, we submit our decision to all of the other European DPAs. They have 4 weeks to review it, and then they can submit relevant and reasoned objections to it, all very carefully defined in the GDPR, or not. So I suppose that's how there has to be an impetus for cooperation from the very beginning, because we know that that's going to be our obligation at the end of the investigation. So you're more likely to get a successful decision that everybody agrees with if you've kept all of the DPAs informed from an early stage.
In terms of the AI Act implementation, can you just explain a little bit about what that entails?
Sure. Well, I suppose the AI Act is a brand new piece of legislation. And what's really interesting from the Data Protection Commission point of view is that we have a number of new roles. So our first new role is as a market surveillance authority. So that's, you know, similar to what the CCPC or Comreg would do at the moment, where they're looking at toys, for example, checking that they have a CE marking, that they're safe to be sold in the Irish marketplace. So we'll have a role like that as it comes to AI systems. We'll also have a role as a fundamental rights authority. So that's quite similar to our current role as the data protection authority. You could say it's looking at fundamental rights and in particular data protection rights, which we're expert in. And we'll also have a role as a notified body. So that's it's a quite a niche role, and it's only in very specific circumstances. But there we'll actually have a role in terms of the certification of compliance in AI systems that are going to be used for law enforcement in particular.
Yeah, that was Grainne Hawkes speaking with me at the office of the Irish Data Protection Commission. It is fascinating work, and there is so much to it. It is sort of mind-blowing to just understand the scale of the work and the impact of their work as well. Over the coming weeks, I'll be bringing you further interviews with members of the team to showcase the full breadth of what it is that they do. But that's it from me for this week. If you've missed any of the show, or you want to listen back to the previous part of this special report, you can do so. Just search for Tech Talk wherever you get your podcasts. John and the team at Off the Ball are up next here on News Talk. I'll chat to you next week.